from LPM.
Louisville Public Media.
Support for LPM podcasts comes from the Eye Care Institute and Butchertown Clinical Trials, where they strive for diversity, equity, and inclusion within their staff, patients, and clinical trial participants. To learn more, visit butchertown.clinic.
I'm Michelle Tyrene Johnson. Welcome to Race Unwrapped, a podcast unwrapping all the ways race affects our world, whether we're thinking about it or not. My guest this episode is Hannah Drake, who is an artist, a writer, a blogger, and just basically all around badass. And I'm going to be talking with her about the things that are particularly on the minds of Black women right now, especially those of us who live in Louisville, the Breonna Taylor case, the coronavirus, and of course, the election. That's all coming up on Race Unwrapped from Louisville Public Media. Welcome to Race Unwrapped. I'm Michelle Tyrene Johnson. My guest today is Hannah Drake, who is a poet, a writer, an activist. First of all, I want to say thank you so much for doing this for me. I have had a Twitter crush on you since I moved to Louisville. So. And so my first season, I wanted to focus on women of color, Black women and other women of color, to talk about the intersection of race and gender, because when people talk about race, they tend to just be talking about men, the men of the race. And when people talk about gender, we both know they're usually talking about white women. And we right now, like at this moment, especially those of us who live in Louisville, but really any American, you know, woman, we got three big things going on, and I wanted your opinion on all three of those big things. And they're obvious things, like the pandemic. So we'll start with that. How do you feel like as a woman, as a Black woman, the pandemic is hitting you just a little bit different than it hits everybody else?
Right. And so when the pandemic started, of course, back in March, essentially Louisville and the nation kind of shut down, and we didn't really know what was going on and all the things. And you had, so you go online, you know, because our lives became social media, and how can we connect to people online since we weren't able to meet in person. Mm-hmm. And so you got this sense, and I have to say, I have to be honest and say, like, I fell into this trap of Americans and people are working together. We are working together to combat this virus and deal with these issues. And as time went on, and more evidence started coming out that this virus was impacting Black people disproportionately, it's like the mood shifted, right? And so we have the slogan in Louisville, we're all in this together. And I wrote this blog, we're not all in this together. Like, the virus hitting us is hitting everyone. But how our response is not togetherness.
Right.
And you have some people that, so I liken it to being out in the ocean on a yacht. Mm-hmm. And so there are some people on a yacht that are being impacted by the virus. Yet Black people are in a dinghy in the middle of the ocean dealing with the virus.
Well, now.
So we are not technically all in this together. We're all being impacted with the same virus.
Yeah.
But the impacts and ramifications of it certainly do not hit us the same. And the coronavirus did this thing that it put spotlights on disparities in this world. Like, and you couldn't deny that Black people were suffering and people of color were suffering and Black people didn't have health care and they had these underlying conditions and many of them often untreated, diabetes and high blood pressure and heart disease. And it was untreated because because they didn't have access to health care.
Yeah.
And so now they're slapped with this virus that invades people and overruns people with these conditions and illnesses. And the world got to look at, wow, if we had just treated people with diabetes or pre-diabetes, even before you have diabetes. If we had just treated that, if we had just made blood pressure medication affordable, if we had just done these things, how different this would look. And I believe that once the virus shifted to being a virus that impacts people with pre-existing conditions and certainly Black people and people of color, but certainly deadliest to Black people, then the response and concern changed. And what this nation or our state, but certainly this nation doesn't understand. And Martin Luther King said it so well, we are inescapably intertwined.
We are.
And if people can understand this, I remember it, and I feel foolish when I tell this story. I feel kind of silly to tell this story. But I remember laying in bed early in the year, and certain areas of China had shut down. And so people went on YouTube and showed, like, you know, China is a very busy country. So it's very busy, and people are walking and doing the things and shopping. And to see it virtually a ghost town was amazing.
Yeah.
And I would go online on YouTube and watch these videos saying, oh, well, look at China shut down. I can't believe this is happening. And something that started thousands of miles away from me has impacted my day-to-day living.
And gonna impact it for a while.
And that should show this world that my very life in America is tied to somebody in China. That should show people how interconnected we are.
And yet being interconnected still doesn't, back to, you know, the point of women of color and the different way things hit us, is it still doesn't mean, back to what you said, that is equal, are we equally connected?
And they don't, it seems like the world or America, I can't even say the world, because the world has responded one way. And America sadly has responded another way. And America has used a virus, a deadly virus, to divide people. And you are in positions of power and leadership, and you are elected into office for the American people. And instead of saying, let's shore up our PPE, let's make sure people aren't getting sick, let's wear a mask, let's try to come together during this time to make America better. Not great, but better. And that's a divisive issue. And that boggles my mind, that how can being better and not sick and doing things where people don't get ill, how is that divisive? Like when I think of my life as a Black woman, I don't care if you're Republican or Democrat. I don't want you to be sick. Like, I, whether you hate me being a Black woman or not, isn't of any concern to me right now. What concerns me is we are not sick. We are not dying. And for some reason, the powers that be have orchestrated the narrative in such a way that if you want to wear a mask and social distance or do something to benefit this state and this nation, then you're wrong.
I mean, you naturally flow to one of the three topics that I was going to ask you about, because I think they're all connected. You naturally went there, you know, the pandemic and then the politics. You know, as a Black woman, what are you sitting on waiting? Because, you know, we're all in this holding pattern.
Black women are always, and I posted this on Twitter. And someone responded, and this is truthful. So I said something that we talked about Breonna Taylor. And I can talk about that forever.
Right.
But, and even now, today, I posted, you know, Virginia has passed. And I believe it's the state of Virginia, not a city of Virginia, but the state of Virginia, has passed the Breonna Taylor Act and banning no-knock warrants. And I said, this is always bittersweet because it comes on the back of a deceased Black woman.
Yeah.
And so a part of me is celebrating that this will not happen to another young Black woman or man or child in their home, that they will not be in their home minding their own business, sleeping, doing whatever they're doing, and the police ram in their door and shoot at them.
I mean, and that's the thing that people don't get. If you are sitting as a Black woman, back to my point about intersection of race and gender, there are certain things that a white woman, just in general, unless she is just like straight up in the middle of the drug trade, like she's straight up in the middle, right? But
they will never understand. Understand that, and so they push back against this legislation, and they push back against it, but they don't understand. And I'll tell you this: I'm near my home. I own my home. There's a garage right behind my home. My garage right behind my home that I own. Fenced in my property, so it's my garage. I own the garage. I own this home. I paid for it. I paid taxes on this home. And so I have a garage door, you know, the remote that goes up. But on the side of my garage door, I have this door. And the door sticks all the time. So you take the lock off and you have to pull it and pull it and pull it and try to get it open. And I've done that maybe one or two times, and it dawned on me.
I know exactly where you're going. Mm-hmm.
I will not sit here and try to pull this door open in a space that I own. I don't rent this house. I own this house. It's my house. But I'm not going to try to pull this door and get it open because it sticks, because I don't want somebody to look at me as a Black woman and call 911 and say, we think she's trying to rob this house.
Exactly. I knew where you were going.
Even in my own home,
uh-huh,
a home that I own, I never use that door.
Oh, wow.
Because the optics of people seeing me, and I'm scared.
Yeah.
In my own home, fenced in.
Yeah.
That people think, well, she's trying to rob this house, and we're going to call the police, and then I end up dead for simply trying to open up a sticky door where I own. You know, and so white women don't understand the luxury they have.
Yep.
To just go out to their, if their door did stick at the garage. They don't understand the pain of thinking every time I drive, I could be pulled over.
Yep.
Every time I'm shopping, somebody might think I'm stealing. Every time I just exist in my neighborhood, it can be a problem. Like in my neighborhood, right across the street from me, there's a man with "Don't Tread on Me" flag Blue Lives Matter flag. And I wonder, what does he think of me in his neighborhood?
You know, I mean, that's not, but I mean, I get it. I got a name for it. I invented it years ago. It's called Blacknalysis. You know,
it's called what?
Blacknalysis. And you automatically know what the definition is if you're black, right? Where you have to go through that extra step of analyzing things as a black person, because back to your door, you know, topic, you know that again, I know this isn't a universal, you always got to do that, not all cops, not all white people, but we all know that if a woman could be trying to break into your damn house, a white woman, and not only would she not be arrested, but depending on the time of day and the police officer and how she looked, somebody would stop and go, let me help you get in your house,
let me help you. But if it's somebody black, and here's the thing, in my neighborhood, I will tell you this, let's go there a little further. In my neighborhood, which is predominantly white, a white woman, I'm going to go here, a white woman across the street, I have some packages on my door, and I have cameras up. This white woman enters across the street and steals my packages, but I have it all on camera. And I tell people all the time, when they want to talk about black on black crime, which is a narrative that should have never been sold.
Oh, yeah.
I didn't call this white on black crime. She stole my packages because she has proximity to my house. And when you see crime that's perpetuated by black people to another black person, it's because of proximity. It's not because black people are inherently evil to black people. But I use that as an example all the time when people want to perpetuate this black on black myth. Crime is committed oftentimes because of proximity.
Yep, that's why I tell people this all the time. Intra-racial crime is this at pretty much the same rate as black on black crime, because of just exactly what you say. Crime is a crime of proximity. So I got to switch subjects quickly, as much as we could do this for 5 hours.
Girl,
I could have a 5-hour podcast with you, but I digress.
Call me anytime.
I digress. What do you, as a black woman, what do you think it says to the world that this Breonna Taylor case has just taken on a life of its own outside of Louisville?
Yeah. So let me, I'm working right now on a letter to Louisville. And I'm going to say this and try not to get teary and emotional. I've lived in Louisville for over 20 years. My dad is born and raised here, born, raised, and died here. My grandmother, born, raised, and died here. I can't even track beyond my grandmother, because this is what Louisville does. It swallows up stories and feeds them back to people for their benefit. And I've been a person in Louisville that has given everything that I could to Louisville. Last year, I think it was last year, it's on my wall right now, I was one of Louisville's best of the best for my poetry.
Congrats.
I am a daughter of Ali. That was last year. It's not years ago. It was last year. I was selected as a daughter of Ali from the Muhammad Ali Center. I have done many things in this community to give back to this community. And this is before Breonna Taylor. But I knew that this was a community that needed hope and healing and restoration. And then Breonna Taylor happened. And I'll never forget. I was at home. My friend called me. My friend Philip called me, the reporter at the time at Courier Journal. And he said, Hannah, a black woman was killed by the LMPD last night. And I said, what did you just say? I said, rewind back what you just said to me. He said, a black woman was killed by the LMPD last night. She was the EMT. I can't get any traction around this story. And I was wondering if you could share her story on your platforms to get traction around it. So, of course, I looked at the story and I started sharing. And I'm going to be honest, only 50 people reshared my story. I have over 13,000 followers.
Wow.
Only 50 people shared that story of a black woman that was killed by the LMPD. And then Sean King shared it. And it took on a life form of its own. And we started sharing it and talking about it and all the things. But this is where I stand with this. I'm not trying to be belabored. I'm just trying to set up the story. Mm-hmm. Is that black women, I'm fighting back tears, but black women will always have a hard time getting justice. And I've always said Breonna Taylor had two things working against her. She was black and she was a woman. And those things will always work against somebody. Breonna Taylor would always be in an uphill battle. Malcolm X said the most disrespected person in America is the black woman. And often people misquote that and say the most disrespected woman. But he didn't say that. He said the most disrespected person. So out of man or women, black women are at the bottom.
It is amazing how I've seen people misquote that too. And I'm like, no. No, he's talking about a very specific group of people. Don't get it confused.
Right.
Coincidentally, the specific group of people who also vote the highest for greater good of everybody.
Now, you're trying to get me to go there. Because here's the thing. And let's talk about vote. Let me ask this in here. Let me slap this on your podcast. Let me ask this in here. I have to say it because I'm Hannah. So I just have to speak my truth.
Speak up truth, Hannah. Hannah, speak it to Michelle.
I have to. So Breonna Taylor happened back in March. And I was screaming, and many people were screaming since March, and it didn't get any attention. And then, okay, so May, we have the protest. Protest started in May. But we have people in leadership. People that desire to be in leadership that haven't said one thing about Breonna Taylor. And how do you vote for people? Your vote. How do you vote for people that don't care that you are worried about existing in your very home, that don't care that I can't go outside to my garage and open a side door? That's what's important. So you as a person, a politician that's running, care about that. Care about me. Because the thing about it is with black people, these are very basic things. We're not asking you to change the world. We are saying by doing these minimal things, you will change the world. I shouldn't be scared to open up my garage door in a home that I own. But I have politicians, Amy McGrath, Mitch McConnell, clearly Mitch McConnell, you don't get it. Mitch McConnell is rich. He's successful. He's got money. His wife has money. He's good. Amy, and I'm a person that has said, and this is an exclusive. When I say this to you, this is an exclusive because news people have contacted me and said, Hannah, where are you standing on that? And I didn't get a response. I'm giving you an exclusive.
I'm ready. I'm ready.
Exclusive. So you need to run this because this is an exclusive.
Okay.
I don't like Amy McGrath. I don't care for Amy McGrath. I've been contacted by her campaign many times. Come meet with her. Say something. No. Because Amy didn't do what I felt Amy needed to do for Black people. But I'm going to tell you one thing, because my friend from USA Today contacted me and said, what made Amy change your mind? And I said, you know what? It was that last debate that Amy did that made me go on the polls. And you're the first one to get this. I ain't said it.
I'm ready.
I ain't said it. It made me go vote for her. People laugh me many times, Tana, who you vote for? I never said it, so you're the first one to get this exclusive.
Okay.
I went in the poll and I voted for Amy. Because I felt like in that moment in time, watching her on that debate, she got it.
Okay.
And I also feel like she's someone that's teachable. Mitch ain't teachable. But I feel like Amy is teachable. So you got the exclusive. You got everybody been asking, who did Hannah vote for? Well, you got the exclusive. That's who I voted for. Everybody been asking. Major news networks that said, Hannah, who you vote for? I kept it quiet, but you got the exclusive.
Hannah, you my girl. Hannah Drake, as I've already said, is my Twitter crush. And by that I mean she is a woman who is bold and who tells it like it is, but she does it with creativity and just with her badass ability to be a wordsmith who brings truth to power.
Race Unwrapped is produced by Michelle Tyrene Johnson for Louisville Public Media. Our senior producer is Laura Ellis. Allison Cross created our music. For more information, to contact us, or to support Race Unwrapped, visit WFPL.org/RaceUnwrapped.